Is it still snowing?
No more snow. We can be on our way soon. Go on with your yarn.
Well, Mark and I discovered that Ranulph had a reputation among the peasantry for having possessed prophetic powers. For instance, we found out from Everard's old housekeeper, who's dead now, that in Ranulph's time, people used to come and consult him about the future. Just as if he were an old woman with earrings sitting in a tent.
And did he make this special talent of his available for all comers?
He was affable and conversable. Actually, I think he just supposed it a chance to worm people's stories out of them. Doesn't really seem promising to me. So few people have stories worth speaking of, after all. I'm sure I haven't. A woman without a past and without a future. No novelist could muscle in on.
What are you doing?
Putting some clothes on.
You sure it will be empty?
What?
Your future.
Oh, I suspect so.
I suspect it's going to be quite different. Still, there's the point.
What point?
What Ranulph was interested in. Not people's past or future, but their fantasies. He made stories out of people's daydreams, all the lurid and scandalous things people saw themselves doing. And sometimes, of course, and perhaps years later, they would really do them. Or something tolerably like. And there it would be already in one of Ranulph Raven's stories. And the result would be a popular notion that his stories were really a species of prophetic books.
So, the blind man...
As a lad, he cherished a nasty plan to liquidate his brother. But he remembered having let it out to Ranulph. So he had a fear that it would be a pretty risky business to commit a crime which might have been put into a book donkeys years before. Hence his fury on being told by your brother that there was such a yarn of Ranulph's.
I must say, you have quite the professional touch. Is the ladder still there?
Yes, it is.
Time you were off.
I would call it extremely nasty. Listen, this story of yours is all fibs. Yes or no?
No. The whole story of the blind man is gospel. Why?
Because for some reason you don't seem very proud of it. In fact, you seem less pleased with it every time we look at each other.
Oh, what rot. It's just that the whole Ranulph business is so tiresome, I suppose.
Surely it's all past history now.
I suppose it is. Come on, let's go. Appleby's End. Surely they couldn't...
Whatever are you talking about?
Oh, nothing. Come on. There's a very chilly 5-mile walk ahead of us.
My clothes are still wet.
So are mine.
Now, what about a race to warm us up a bit?
Not in this overcoat.
I'll carry it.
I thought I was wearing it to satisfy your sense of decorum.
Come on. Right, ready, get set, go!
Oh.
You better.
Oh, much.
Right then, go on with your story.
Oh, you'd only laugh.
What do you mean?
Well, you probably think it's all rot. But the fact is this, that every now and then, Ranulph's ghost pops up and does something rather ineffective by vindicating Ranulph's character as a seer. Mr. Appleby? John? Didn't you hear a shout? Or a cry?
A shout is likely enough. How far are we from home now?
Oh, not more than a mile. I suppose they may be hunting for us. Let's dodge them. We'll turn into the wood at the bottom of this hill and take the bridle path. That brings us straight into the stables.
You were telling me about Ranulph's ghost.
So I was.
Why did you say he was ineffective?
Because it would take a Ranulph expert to understand what was going on.
But what is going on?
Ranulph's stories.
Are you suggesting that the ghost tries to arrange things so that some of his hoary old tales start coming true 40 years on?
Something like that. I'll give you an example. There's a story of Ranulph's called The Coach of Cacus. You'll remember that Cacus
was was the son of Vulcan and a cattle thief. He confused people of my profession who might be around by hauling cattle about backwards by their tails.
Anyway, this story is about a coachman who got away with something nasty by harnessing his horse headfirst into the shafts and making it back away through the snow or mud or something, tracks appearing to lead in the wrong direction and throwing people off the scent. What do you think of that?
Singularly little, I'm afraid. The carriage wouldn't go straight, and anyone knowing horses would only have to glance at the carriage.
It happened to Hey-Ho.
Hey-Ho?
Last winter, in snow just like this. Oh, we'll turn off here. There are several dips that are sure to be full of drifted snow, but it's a shortcut.
You were saying that Hazel...
He'd gone into the local pub one night when he was supposed to be doing something else. He left Spot in his cart outside. And when he came out, the brute was harnessed in the wrong way round, just as in the coach at Cacus. The ghost of Ranulph, you see, amusing himself by playing variations on his own story. Mm-hmm. And Hayho was so tight that he couldn't make out what had happened. He tried to drive through the village.
Oh, damn! Oh. Yes! Gone right up to my knees.
Up you come.
Oh.
Evidently one of the dips you mentioned. Nothing like keeping up the evening's fun to the very end. But surely the whole thing was a practical joke by somebody who knew Ranulph's cacus yarn. Your brother, most likely.
Mark's not much of a Ranulph fan, and he didn't even know the coach of Cacus.
Sure?
Quite sure. Mark and I have an agreement not to tell lies to each other. It's extraordinarily convenient.
No doubt.
Of course, it was just a joke. And funny. But the point is, it's only one of a number of incidents. Incidents not funny. Usually slightly sinister, but always extremely ineffective.
And they're all hitched onto the Ranulph opera.
Yes.
I see. But even if ineffective, these incidents seem to have been on your mind, and you call them sinister. There's really something about them that upsets or scares you.
Scares me? Oh, rubbish. That blind man affair years ago may have scared me, but I was a kid then. Nothing scares me now. Hey-ho! Oh.
Hey-ho! Or rather, Hey-ho's head.
A great loss. Sugar, Mr. Appleby?
Thank you, Miss Wren.
For Spot, that is to say.
Dead. Reach me over the ham. Hell.
Hell? This place is too cold for hell. Hell is murky.
Plenty of coffee. Rainbird always rises to the occasion. I'm very glad it wasn't Rainbird. Rainbird?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm glad it wasn't you. This organization inside the house is much more trying than outside.
Thank you, ma'am.
Look here. Is there something queer about Hayho's death? I don't like the feeling of all this a bit. I didn't like the manner of the people who brought him back. What's it all about?
His head. His head was lying on the snow. On the snow?
No, you've got it all wrong, my dear. The poor old chap's body's up there in his room. His head's on his shoulders, all right.
But was I just seeing things? We came around a corner and I thought I saw Hayho's head lying there on the snow. His eyes were glaring.
It was a snowdrift. He was bedded up to the neck in snow and quite dead when you saw him. Naturally, it gave him a bit of a turn and Mr. Appleby carried you home. Do you know that you had straws in your hair? Just as if you were a distraught heroine.
Oh, Robert, it was hay. Mr. Appleby and I had been tumbling in the hay.
Tumbling in the hay? Was not that rather unseasonable, child? And indeed, rather...
Teresa, the events of the evening are still distinctly confused. But we are extremely grateful to our guest for having looked after Judith so well. And now I think it would be wise if we went to bed. There's no denying that a certain amount of awkwardness awaits us in the morning. So, a good night's sleep.
Awkwardness? Rainbird, there are plenty of eggs and so forth. Coffee beans.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
I fear, Teresa, that you don't quite apprehend what I mean by awkwardness. The awkwardness will be with the police and with people of that sort.
Oh, no doubt there will be policemen. But Rainbird is perfectly competent to entertain them in the servants' hall. Judith, dear, why are you making faces at me?
Because of Mr. Appleby, Aunt Clarissa. Mr. Appleby is a policeman.
Oh, is he indeed? Nowadays, there are so many interesting careers, are there not? But I was referring to the local constabulary. And will someone tell me, by the way, why the police should be interested in Hayhoe's death? Now, if it had been Rainbird...
My dear, it appears to be the general opinion that it is impossible to bury oneself up to the neck in a snowdrift. It would seem, therefore, that somebody must have deliberately dug the unfortunate old man in.
Do you mean that Hayho has been murdered?
It rather looks as if it must be called that.
Oh, no doubt it is Hannah Rubin's boy. Only last month he stole a turkey from the Merkel. And why that hysterical laugh?
I was only yawning by way of preparing to go to bed. Rainbird, Mr. Appleby has been most kind to me. Do see that he has soap as well as towels, or towels as well as soap.
Very good, Miss Judith.
Good night, everybody. Aunt Clarissa, come along.
Good night, Judith.
Good night, Clarissa. And I think we ought to be off, too.
Yes, I think it is time to call it a day.
Nor shall we have a cigar. The new millennium people send down a box every time we click off a letter. Yes, we'll have a cigar.
And Clarissa may well find the smoke oppressive in the morning.
In which case, it will be better to move to the library.
Which will at least give Mr. Appleby the opportunity to feast his eyes on Theodore's fantasies.
This way, Mr. Appleby. Come along.
Follow me. Now, the waxwork figures are the collection of Adolphus Raven.
Well, they're certainly remarkable, but why are they all...
Mongolians? Well, Adolphus joined the Romish communion and was appointed bishop of Mancus Sardaic, which gave him ample scope to assemble the collection. The collection was something of a landmark in its own field. Only a few years ago, the whole thing was wanted by a museum in Idaho, I think, or perhaps it was Oregon. Only there was a hitch at the last moment.
They didn't see their way to pay. I shall go to bed, Everard.
All right, you do that. Good. Now, come along, Mr. Appleby.
Come along.
All right. Here we are. And how pleasant to see such an excellent fire. This is the library, Mr. Appleby.
The library?
Yes, I see that you're somewhat amused by poor Uncle Theodore's marble. Most of it, of course, is in Judith's studio, but the choicer pieces were brought in here. The nubile lady who is joyfully leaping onto the bull is the Rape of Europa, although she's been compared to a bareback rider in the circus. The youth, clasping what Mark insists is a beer barrel, is genius, guarding the secret of the tomb. Would you like a cigar, sir? Of course, this sort of thing is not exactly in modern taste. I myself prefer Judith every time. Indeed, a few years ago, we explored the possibilities of selling Theodore up. But, you see, there seemed to be very little public interest in his work.
Let me light you up, Mr. Appleby.
Oh, thank you.
Books, on the other hand, always have their price.
Yes, I had noticed that the library...
is distinguished by the almost total absence of books, yes.
Yes.
We found that a folio volume of 18th century sermons is a reasonably good breakfast all round. Mr. Appleby is at present in process of digesting a volume of Dodsley's Miscellany, or a badly cropped copy of Dryden's Fables.
Mark, when I was a boy, I was taught that gentlemen don't talk money after dinner. And even if that good habit has fallen into disrepute...
I suppose that Hayhoe was a fairly elderly man. Older than any of you.
Hayhoe? Dear me, yes. Old as the hills, poor old chap. Must have been a stable lad about the place when I was a babe in arms. About a contemporary of Rainbird, I should say. Wouldn't you, Robert?
Well, Rainbird and Hayhoe were both born some years before any of us.
Judith was telling me some story about him and the horse. Spot, isn't it? She said there was some kind of connection with one of Ranulph's stories. I didn't quite understand it.
Spot? Oh, that. Well, I suppose she felt the necessity to entertain you with something. Did she tell you about the blind man when we were kids?
Yes. Yes, she told me about that.
Oh, that old family story. I haven't heard it mentioned for years.
What Judith must have on her mind is the business of the coach of Cacus and the other affairs of that sort. Luke's tombstone, for instance.
Your brother has a tombstone.
A Christmas present. Somebody sent Luke a tombstone. And what could better hit his taste?
Yeah, I don't suppose, Mr. Appleby, that you happened ever to have read my father's Paxton's Destined Hour. It's about someone called Paxton who is strolling past the sort of place where they make tombstones when his eye is suddenly caught by his own name. He finds he is reading his own tombstone, complete with the date of his death.
But I've read a story like that, and certainly not by your father.
Yeah, quite. Quite so, yes, but these things do happen.
Only Luke didn't just see a tombstone. Somebody sent him one by rail, complete with date of death. Reference to Paxton's destined hour was obvious.
And how did your brother feel about it?
Well, to start with, he went around telling everybody, and that was awkward, for some little reporter creature on our local paper got hold of the story, and it looked as if Luke was going to be thoroughly pestered. Fortunately, Everard's solicitor, who is a family friend, was here at the time and stopped any fuss.
After that, Luke began rather to hug the thing.
May it be said to account for his present, rather elegiac mood?
Oh, I shall hardly say so. Luke is commonly like that. But as the date approached, what you might call Luke's destined hour...
You mean the date's passed? It's all over.
Oh, dear me, yes. How long ago was it, Everard?
Oh, 6 months or thereabouts.
Yes, the appointed day must have been not without its discomfort for a man of naturally morbid mind.
But the day came and went and nothing happened. We set to know whether Luke was really disturbed. Anyway, the day just passed.
Luke still has the tombstone. He says that only a little alteration will be necessary and it will do later on.
Oh, dear me, how late it is. We really must be getting Mr. Appleby to bed. Mark, be so good as to ring for Rainbird, will you? Yeah. Billy Bidewell must be told to take Mr. Appleby to Snarl in the morning. And I hope, my dear sir, that you will come back to us when your business is transacted.
Thank you.
Judith, I'm sure, would be anxious to have your opinion of her work.
You rang, sir?
Ah, Rainbird, kindly provide our guest with a candle and see him to his room.
Yes, sir.
Good night, Mr. Appleby.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Before she went to bed, sir, Miss Judith handed me this note. It is for you, sir.
Thank you.
Dear Mr. Appleby, there is nothing corresponding to the death of Heyhoe in any of Ranulph Raven's works. You are to sleep in his room. Everything he published is in the bookcase near the door. I hope you have a safe journey to Snarl. Yours sincerely, Judith Raven.
Very sad about Heyhoe.
Yeah.
Quite shocking.
Yeah. Might be worse, sir. Happily might be worse by far. Might set Spot. Only set Heyhoe. So who cared? Yep, buddy!
Set? Isn't that what you do with turnips?
Yeah. They set Heyhoe in snow.
But who is they?
They? Well, who would it be, mister? That was his true with him. Mr. Everard. And Mr. Robert, to be sure. And Mr. Luke.
You mean to tell me you believe that all these people set upon Heyhoe and...
And Mr. Mark and all. And Miss Judith. And Miss Clarissa, too.
It may interest you to know that I was with Miss Judith myself the whole time.
Oh, Where?
What do you mean by where?
Where was you and Miss Judith all that time then?
We had a good deal of difficulty making our way back to Dream.
Yeah. Rainbird do say you was in haystack.
Certainly. It came on to snow very hard and we had to take shelter by a haystack.
Rainbird do say in a haystack.
Quite so. Surprisingly warm. My good fellow... What should put it into your head that your master and his brothers could possibly have anything to do with the death of Halo?
Because Raven's a do-out like other folk. Maybe because of the stories.
Oh, the story. You mean one of Ranulph Raven's stories?
Yeah. Grammar Boyswell's stories.
A relative of yours?
That's me grammar. The tale of the fearful maid. And how she came upon the howling and hollering heads.
Well, how did she?
This fearful maid, as young and tender as any in the parish, was walking through Squire's Ashbinney. It was spring, and the stinkweed was rife in the ditches. And from across the meadow, the bawcock in the blubberberry...
Leave them out. Drop the stinkweed and keep to the maid.
Well... She came round a bend, and there was the head. Lying on the ground it was, as if tumbled by the scythe. And it roared its eyes, and foamed at the mouth, and howled like all the souls of all the damned in hell. It was the head of the squire himself. And it squinnied at that fearful maid, and her wit left her, poor tender Pete. And never more words spoke she, but to howl off and holler like the head. And Squire was offended at that, and turned her out of the parish.
Squire? You mean the same Squire, the one who had lost his head?
Yeah, he had no more lost his head than I have. It was all the work of a great doctor, famous in those days. Amid the strange cures he had, and he tried earth baths on the squire in the Ask Finney. The squire was set there regular by a valet. Only this time, the valet had forgotten, tarried too late in the pub.
I see. Do many people know the story around these parts?
Yeah. Gammer never told that story to no but me. He kept it, Freud, because I so like to be thinking of that fearful maid. Hey, mister, you must know a powerful deal about maids.
Billy, I think you had best stop here. I'll walk to the inn. Heaven knows what you might decide to blurt out in front of the chief constable.
Have a port.
Awkward business, this.
Any port in a storm.
As you say, Colonel, an awkward business.
I haven't been told a thing about it. Only that it is rather odd. What has happened?
Happened? Mutley, what has happened?
Quite so, sir. What has happened? Very nicely put.
Man's an ass. Might be useful as a damn dictaphone, but doesn't earn his feed in the police. Though, for that matter, nothing much has happened. Simply that Mulberry's fussed over it. And must have us bring down a fella from London.
Well, sir, there is a boy missing.
Rubbish. Half-witted boy, nothing more.
Would that be Hannah Hubin's boy?
Well, I'm blessed. Not a friend of Mulberry's, by any chance. He has some deuce odd ones.
I don't know Mulberry.
Sir, Mulberry Farmer, Lord Lieutenant. Big man down here. Old friend, too. Wouldn't have asked them to send you down else. I think I'll take you over to luncheon with him. You seem perfectly presentable.
Thank you very much.
Mutler, you can go away. No further use for you.
Very well, Colonel.
No, stop. Give Mr. Appleby your appreciation of the situation. Avoid prolixity, incoherence, and irrelevant detail.
Very good, sir. It's an affair of statues, like.
Of statues?
And a waxwork.
A waxwork?
Dictaphone habit catching.
And seems to me all to have come of Sir Mulberry's getting a litter of pigs.
Gloucester Old Spots.
Ah, from Brettingham Scarlet Linger, no doubt.
Have another glass of port.
Thank you.
Well, Sir Mulberry got this litter of pigs a good time back, and one of the pigs was a male pig.
Man means a boar.
Thank you, sir. That would be the technical word, no doubt. Well, one morning, Sir Mulberry goes over to have a word with it and finds that it's been spirited away overnight. Only something else has been left in its place. A great boar in marble or some such stuff that must have weighed pretty well a ton. Did you ever hear of such a crazy thing? A
lot of nonsense, but it worries him, it seems. Keeping it as quiet as possible, but asked to have you sent down here. Glad to know how you explain it.
I'm quite unable to explain it, I'm afraid. It sounds nonsense to me, too.
Pity. Disappointing. Should have asked for an older man. Fellow with more experience, no doubt, for his wise at once.
Very probably.
However, presentable, at least. Sir, come along. Possible that when you have a deco at Mulberry, the truth will dawn.
There it is. All 2 tons of it. Queer thing. Gave me quite a turn, I don't mind admitting it. Ghastly. No pig looks like that.
I was wondering if it might have been stolen from a museum. It had some letters carved on the back.
T.R.?
T.R. -B, how did you know?
Just an idle conjecture.
A spot of luncheon wouldn't be amiss. Then we can look at that great staring waxwork. And the cow.
The cow?
It was the cow that turned that wretched old woman from drool to mentor, wasn't it? Has Spike not told you?
Ah, old Mrs. Ulstrup, of course.
Amazing. Deuced queer your knowing about the woman of drool. And the letters on the back. Young, of course, but deuced clever.
It is an extremely disagreeable business. It brings such extremely disagreeable people round the place. There was a journalist the very morning after the pig, a most impertinent man. Fortunately, I discovered he was from the Banner.
The Banner?
It happens to be owned by my brother, so the fellow went away.
Extremely fortunate.
After the Hoobin Boy, too, after the waxwork affair, a reporter came down from the Blair. But as it happened, the Blair had been bought the week before by Lord Sparshot, one of my father's closest friends.
So the Blair fellow went away, too. But tell me about the boy Hoobin. He was employed here?
Well, quite recently. My husband agreed to him being engaged to help the stable boys. But they objected to his odd ways, and he was quartered by himself. Then one morning, this extremely disagreeable joke repeated itself. The boy was gone, and there was a waxwork there instead.
I suppose that it would be a rather an exotic-looking waxwork. Swarthy, with suggestions of yellow, altogether ferocious in expression, and recalling the Orient or the inner reaches of Asia.
Oh,
precisely so. But how do you know?
It's what we commonly find in cases of this sort, the Oriental or Eurasian waxwork.
By Jove, is that so? Man has great experience. Took to him at once. Everything explained in a jiffy, you'll see.
I suppose, Lady Farmer, that you knew Hayhoe?
Everard Raven's man. Yes, I know Hayhoe, an extremely disagreeable old person.
He's dead. They found him last night, buried in snow.
All frozen and stiff?
Decidedly so. As stiff as a statue, as they say.
No doubt he drank.
I suppose he did. Did you ever hear an odd story about him?
I don't often hear odd stories about other people's servants.
Come to think of it, there was something odd about the old fellow. But I'm dashed if I can remember what. Except he was the only man who could handle that great horse of theirs and their ramshackle old coach. A bit hard up a dream one can't help seeing. Even reduced to slin the books in the library.
Books? You know, that was why I was rattled. Something about a book. I can't at all remember what. Odd.
Do you mean one of Ranulph Raven's books?
I'm sure I couldn't say.
Well, if you'll finish your coffee, we may as well go and look at that marble call.
Mary, I must go about to linger. I shall leave you in Inspector Appleby's good hands. I'm sure he'll come up with something.
I think it's beginning to be possible to see a little light in all this.
See light? Nothing but grope in the dark, if you ask me.
Ah, that's it. Just come into my head. Told you I knew something about the old fellow, Hayhoe. No particular reason to be called Hayhoe at all. Father unknown and all that. But mother was old Mrs. Grope, woman they found in the well. Must be getting on. Mutlow will see to Appleby. He'll be round in the car.
Very curious things taken to happening in these parts, Mr. Appleby. Very curious indeed.
Well, yes, I suppose so. I must say that when it came to the cow and poor old Mrs. Ostrup, I did feel that things were becoming a bit out of the way.
Ah, but I'm speaking of last night, Mr. Appleby. There's tales of an old-fashioned coach floating down the dream in clear moonlight. Two people were sitting on the roof of it, a man and a woman.
Yeah, me.
They were pretty well undressed.
What?
And then there's that lad, Billy Boydwell. Seems that he's been saying that last night you...
I want to find Gregory Grove. Where is he likely to be?
The engine driver. If he's on time, he'll just about be drawing into sneak. But he may well be on his way to linger. Unless, of course, he's running really late, in which case he'll still be at Snarl.
Find him.
Find him, Mr. Appleby?
There's a road within sight of the railway line, I suppose. Cruise along it, Inspector, until you spot Gregory Grove. He may take us a little way in our investigations, which is probably more than the vulgar gossip you have been listening to will know.
No offence, Mr. Appleby, I hope. It's simply that something very queer has happened over at your friend's place of dream. A regular sensation the thing is likely to cause. There's half a dozen reporters about the place already.
You think there's the makings of a sensation in the Hayhoe affair? Has his body been competently examined?
Well, there was our local police surgeon this morning.
Ah.
But Mr. Raven, it seems, made a bit of a fuss. Having some bigwig over later.
Very wise. Your friend Billy Bidewell is of the opinion that this old man Hayhoe was simply put out of the way by the Raven family acting in concert. The sufficient reason being that they thought he was a nuisance and that Billy was now capable of managing Spot.
Well, I'm blessed. Of course, I've barely heard the details since I saw you last. It seemed altogether mysterious. Not that one possibility hasn't occurred to me.
What's that?
That this matter of the old man Hayhoe's death might be connected in some way with these queer doings at Tiffin Place.
A very ingenious fancy. Does great credit, if I may say so, to your agility of mind. But a bit far-fetched all the same.
Oh, that's Grope. He's whistling at old Amos Sturrock's goats. But he's not going to sneak from Linger. He's going from Linger to sneak. He's forgotten Murcutt's milk, if you ask me. Now he's coming back for it.
Well, we'll stop him. Go up.
Murcutt's milk, if you ask me. Now he's coming back for it.
Well, we'll stop him. Go up.